Kate Anselm was another star programmer at Wayforward.
From Saturday the 4th to Sunday the 5th of May, Reveil will embark on its 11th loop around the sun. Reveil is a collaborative sound and radio project presented by the SoundCap Cooperative that circles the Earth on live audio streams at daybreak. Reveil will be mixed from a hub at Stavehill Ecological Park in South London and stations at Tartu, Sunshine Coast, Cagna, and additional locations to be announced. You can listen online on Resonance Extra, Waveform, and other participating stations. For more information, please visit soundted.org/Reveil.
Technologies. She was working on a long-term artificial intelligence project, the sort of thing that sounded like an absurd pipe dream until you heard her talking about it. Gordon needed to hear her talking about it quite regularly, partly because he was nervous about the money it was costing, and partly because, well, there was little doubt that Gordon liked to hear Kate talking anyway. "I didn't want to disturb you," she said. "It's just I was trying to contact Gordon and can't. There's no reply from London, or the cottage, or his car, or his bleeper. It's just that for someone as obsessively in contact as Gordon, it's a bit odd. You heard he's had a phone put in his isolation tank, true?"
I haven't spoken to him since yesterday," said Richard.
He suddenly remembered the tape he had taken from Susan's answering machine, and hoped to God there wasn't anything more important in Gordon's message than ravings about rabbits. He said,
"I know he was going to the cottage. I don't know where he is. Have you tried?" Richard couldn't even think of anywhere else to try.
Good God!
Richard?
How extraordinary!
Richard, what's the matter?
Nothing, Kate. Just read the most astounding thing.
Really? What are you reading?
The telephone directory, in fact.
Really? I must rush out and buy one. Have the film rights gone?
Look, sorry, Kate, can I get back to you? I don't know where Gordon is at the moment, and
don't worry, I know how it is when you can't wait to turn the next page. They always keep you guessing till the end, don't they? It must have been Zbigniew that did it. Have a good weekend. She hung up.
Richard hung up too, and sat staring at the box advertisement lying open in front of him in the yellow pages. It said, "Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. We solve the whole crime. We find the whole person. Phone today for the whole solution to your problem. Missing cats and messy divorces a speciality. 33A Peckender Street, London, N1. 01-354-9112. Peckender Street was only a few minutes' walk away. Richard scribbled down the address, pulled on his coat, and trotted downstairs, stopping to make another quick inspection of the sofa. There must, he thought, be something terribly obvious that he was overlooking. The sofa was jammed on a slight turn in the long, narrow stairway. At this point, the stairs were interrupted for a couple of yards of flat landing, which corresponded with the position of the flat directly beneath Richard's. However, his inspection produced no new insights, and he eventually clambered on over it and out of the front door. In Islington, you can hardly hurl a brick without hitting three antique shops, an estate agent, and a bookshop. Even if you didn't actually hit them, you would certainly set off their burglar alarms, which wouldn't be turned off again till after the weekend. A police car played its regular game of dodgems down Upper Street and squealed to a halt just past him. Richard crossed the road behind it. The day was cold and bright, which he liked. He walked across the top of Islington Green, where Winers got beaten up, past the site of the old Collins Music Hall, which had got burnt down, and through Camden Passage, where American tourists get ripped off. He browsed among the antiques for a while and looked at a pair of earrings which he thought Susan would like, but he wasn't sure. Then he wasn't sure that he liked them, got confused, and gave up. He looked in at a bookshop and, on an impulse, bought an anthology of Coleridge's poems, since it was just lying there. From here, he threaded his way through the winding back streets, over the canal, past the council estates that lined the canal, through a number of smaller and smaller squares, till finally he reached Peckender Street, which had turned out to be a good deal further than he thought. It was the sort of street where property developers in large Jaguars drive around at the weekend salivating. It was full of end-of-lease shops, Victorian industrial architecture, and a short decaying late Georgian terrace, all just itching to be pulled down so that sturdy young concrete boxes could sprout in their places. Estate agents roamed the area in hungry packs, eyeing each other warily, their clipboards on a hair trigger. Number 33, when he eventually found it, neatly sandwiched between 37 and 45, was in a poorish state of repair, but no worse than most of the rest. The ground floor was a dusty travel agent's whose window was cracked and whose faded BOAC posters were probably now quite valuable. The doorway next to the shop had been painted bright red, not well, but at least recently.
A push button next to the door said, in neatly pencilled lettering, Dominique, French lessons, troisième floor. The most striking feature of the door, however, was the bold and shiny brass plaque fixed in the dead centre of it, on which was engraved the legend, Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. Nothing else. It looked brand new. Even the screws that held it in place were still shiny. The door opened to Richard's push, and he peered inside. He saw a short and musty hallway, which contained little but the stairway that led up from it. A door at the back of the hall showed little sign of having been opened in recent years, and had stacks of old metal shelving, a fish tank, and the carcass of a bike piled up against it. Everything else, the walls, the floor, the stairs themselves, and as much of the rear door as could be got at, had been painted grey in an attempt to smarten it up cheaply. But it was now all badly scuffed, and little cups of fungus were peeking from a damp stain near the ceiling. The sounds of angry voices reached him, and, as he started up the stairs, he was able to disentangle the noise of two entirely separate but heated arguments that were going on somewhere above him. One ended abruptly, or at least half of it did, as an angry, overweight man came clattering down the stairs, pulling his raincoat collar straight. The other half of the argument continued in a torrent of aggrieved French from high above them. The man pushed past Richard and said, "Save your money, mate, it's a complete washout," and disappeared out into the chilly morning. The other argument was more muffled. As Richard reached the first corridor, a door slammed somewhere and brought that too to an end. He looked into the nearest open doorway. It led into a small ante-office. The other inner door leading from it was firmly closed. A youngish, plump-faced girl in a cheap blue coat was pulling sticks of makeup and boxes of Kleenex out of her desk drawer and thrusting them into her bag. "Is this the detective agency?" Richard asked her tentatively. The girl nodded, biting her lip and keeping her head down. "And is Mr. Gently in?" "He may be," she said, throwing back her hair, which was too curly for throwing back properly. "And then again, he may not be. I am not in a position to tell. It is not my business to know of his whereabouts. His whereabouts are, as of now, entirely his own business." She retrieved her last pot of nail varnish and tried to slam the drawer shut. A fat book sitting upright in the drawer prevented it from closing. She tried to slam the door again without success. She picked up the book, ripped out a clump of pages, and replaced it. This time she was able to slam the drawer with ease. "Are you his secretary?" asked Richard. "I am his ex-secretary, and I intend to stay that way," she said, firmly snapping her bag shut. "If he intends to spend his money on stupid expensive brass plaques rather than on paying me, then let him. But I won't stay to stand for it, thank you very much. Good for business, my foot. Answering the phones properly is good for business, and I'd like to see his fancy brass plaque do that. If you'll excuse me, I'd like to storm out, please." Richard stood aside, and out she stormed. "And good riddance!" shouted a voice from the inner office. A phone rang and was picked up immediately. "Yes," answered the voice from the inner office testily. The girl popped back for her scarf, but quietly so her ex-employer wouldn't hear. Then she was finally gone. "Yes, Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. How can we be of help to you?" The torrent of French from upstairs had ceased. A kind of tense calm descended. Inside, the voice said, "That's right, Mrs. Sunderland. Messy divorces are our particular speciality." There was a pause. "Yes, thank you, Mrs. Sunderland. Not quite that messy." Down went the phone again, to be replaced instantly by the ringing of another one. Richard looked around the grim little office. There was very little in it. A battered chipboard veneer desk, an old grey filing cabinet, and a dark green tin waste paper bin. On the wall was a Duran Duran poster, on which someone had scrawled in fat red felt-tip, "Take this down, please." Beneath that, another hand had scrawled, "No." Beneath that again, the first hand had written, "I insist that you take it down." Beneath that, the second hand had written, "Won't." Beneath that, "You're fired." Beneath that, "Good." And there the matter appeared to have rested. He knocked on the inner door, but was not answered. Instead, the voice continued, "I'm very glad you asked me that, Mrs. Rawlinson. The term holistic refers to my conviction that what we are concerned with here is the fundamental interconnectedness of all things. I do not concern myself with such petty things as fingerprint powder, telltale pieces of pocket fluff, and inane footprints. I see the solution to each problem as being detectable in the pattern and web of the whole. The connections between causes and effects are often much more subtle and complex than we, with our rough and ready understanding of the physical world, might naturally suppose, Mrs. Rawlinson. Let me give you an example. If you go to an acupuncturist with toothache, he sticks a needle instead into your thigh. Do you know why he does that, Mrs. Rawlinson?" "No, neither do I, Mrs. Rawlinson, but we intend to find out. A pleasure talking to you, Mrs. Rawlinson. Goodbye." Another phone was ringing as he put this down. Richard eased the door open and looked in. It was the same Sflad, or Dirk, Celli. looking a little rounder about the middle, a little looser and redder about the eyes and the neck, but it was still essentially the same face that he remembered most vividly, smiling a grim smile as its owner climbed into the back of one of the Black Mariahs of the Cambridgeshire Constabulary 8 years previously. He wore a heavy old light brown suit, which looked as if it had been worn extensively for bramble-hacking expeditions in some distant and better past, a red checked shirt, which failed entirely to harmonise with the suit, and a green striped tie, which refused to speak to either of them. He also wore thick metal-rimmed spectacles, which probably counted at least in part for his dress sense. "Ah, Mrs. Bluthal, how thoroughly uplifting to hear from you," he was saying. "I was so distressed to hear that Miss Tiddles has passed over. This is desperate news indeed. And yet, should we allow black despair to hide from us the fairy light in which your blessed Moggy now forever dwells? I think not. Hark, I think I hear Miss Tiddles meowing e'en now. She calls to you, Mrs. Bluthal. She says she is content. She is at peace. She says she will be even more at peace when you've paid some bill or other. Does that ring a bell with you at all, Mrs. Bluthal? Come to think of it, I think I sent you one myself, not 3 months ago. I wonder if it can be that which is disturbing her eternal rest." Dirk beckoned Richard in with a brisk wave and then motioned him to pass the crumpled pack of French cigarettes that was sitting just out of his reach. "Sunday night, then, Mrs. Bluthal, Sunday night at 8:30. You know the address? Yes, I'm sure Miss Tiddles will appear, as I'm sure will your cheque-book. Till then, Mrs. Bluthal, till then." Another phone was already ringing as he got rid of Mrs. Bluthal. He grabbed at it, lighting his crumpled cigarette at the same time. "Ah, Mrs. Sorskind," he said in answer to the caller. "My oldest and, may I say, most valued client. Good day to you, Mrs. Sorskind. Good day. Sadly, no sign as yet of young Roderick, I'm afraid, but the search is intensifying as it moves into what I am confident are its closing stages, and I'm sanguine that within mere days from today's date we will have the young rascal permanently restored to your arms and mewing prettily. Ah, yes, the bill, I was wondering if you had received it." Dirk's crumpled cigarette turned out to be too crumpled to smoke, so he hooked the phone onto his shoulder and poked around in the packet for another, but it was empty. He rummaged on his desk for a piece of paper and a stub of pencil, and wrote a note, which he passed to Richard. "Yes, Mrs. Sorskind," he assured the telephone, "I am listening with the utmost attention." The note said, "Tell Secretary, get Sigs." "Yes," continued Dirk into the phone, "but as I have endeavoured to explain to you, Mrs. Sorskind, over the 7 years of our acquaintance, I incline to the quantum mechanical view in this matter. My theory is that your cat is not lost, but that his waveform has temporarily collapsed and must be restored, Schrödinger, Planck, and so on." Richard wrote on the note, "You haven't got Secretary," and pushed it back. Dirk considered this for a while, then wrote "Damn and Blast" on the paper and pushed it to Richard again. "I grant you, Mrs. Sorskind," continued Dirk blithely, "that 19 years is, shall we say, a distinguished age for a cat to reach, yet can we allow ourselves to believe that a cat such as Roderick has not reached it? And should we now, in the autumn of his years, abandon him to his fate? This surely is the time that he most needs the support of our continuing investigations. This is the time that we should redouble our efforts, and with your permission, Mrs. Sorskind, that is what I intend to do. Imagine, Mrs. Sorskind, how you would face him if you had not done this simple thing for him." Richard fidgeted with the note, shrugged himself, and wrote, "I'll get them," on it, and passed it back once more. Dirk shook his head in admonition, then wrote, "I couldn't possibly, that would be most kind." As soon as Richard had read this, Dirk took the note back and added, "Get money from Secretary," to it. Richard looked at the paper thoughtfully, took the pencil, and put a tick next to where he had previously written, "You haven't got Secretary." He pushed the paper back across the table to Dirk, who merely glanced at it and ticked, "I couldn't possibly, that would be most kind." "Well, perhaps," continued Dirk to Mrs. Sorskind, "you could just run over any of the areas in the bill that cause you difficulty, just the broader areas." Richard let himself out. Running down the stairs, he passed a young hopeful in a denim jacket and close-cropped hair, peering anxiously up the stairwell. "Hey, any good, mate?" he said to Richard. "Amazing," murmured Richard, "just amazing." He found a nearby newsagent and picked up a couple of packets of Dix Blur for Dirk and a copy of the new edition of Personal Computer World, which had a picture of Gordon Way on the front. "Oh, pity about him, isn't it?" said the newsagent. "What? Oh, yes, said Richard. He often thought the same himself, but was surprised to find his feelings so widely echoed. He picked up a Guardian as well, paid and left. Dirk was still on the phone, with his feet on the table, when Richard returned, and it was clear that he was relaxing into his negotiations. "Yes, expenses were, well, expensive in the Bahamas, Mrs. Sorskind. It is in the nature of expenses to be so, hence the name." He took the proffered packets of cigarettes, seemed disappointed there were only two, but briefly raised his eyebrows to Richard in acknowledgement of the favour he had done him, then waved him to a chair. The sounds of an argument conducted partly in French drifted down from the floor above. "Of course I will explain to you again why the trip to the Bahamas was so vitally necessary," said Dirk gently, soothingly. "Nothing could give me greater pleasure. I believe, as you know, Mrs. Sorskind, in the fundamental interconnectedness of all things. Furthermore, I have plotted and triangulated the vectors of the interconnectedness of all things and traced them to a beach in the Bahamas, which it is therefore necessary for me to visit from time to time in the course of my investigations. I wish it were not the case, and sadly I am allergic to both sun and rum punches. But then we all have our crosses to bear, do we not, Mrs. Sorskind?" A babble seemed to break out from the phone. "You sadden me, Mrs. Sorskind. I wish I could find it in my heart to tell you that I find your scepticism rewarding and invigorating, but with the best will in the world, I cannot. I am drained by it, Mrs. Sorskind, drained. I think you will find an item in the bill to the effect. Let me see." He picked up a flimsy carbon copy lying near him. "Detecting and triangulating the vectors of interconnectedness of all things, £150, we've dealt with that. Tracing same to beach in Bahamas, fare and accommodation, a mere 1,500. The accommodation was, of course, distressingly modest. Ah, yes, here we are, struggling on in the face of draining scepticism from client. Drinks, £327.50. Would that I did not have to make such charges, my dear Mrs. Sorskind. Would that the occasion did not continually arise. Not believing in my methods only makes my job more difficult, Mrs. Sorskind, and hence, regrettably, more expensive." Upstairs, the sounds of argument were becoming more heated by the moment. The French voice seemed to be verging on hysteria. "I do appreciate, Mrs. Sorskind," continued Dirk, "that the cost of the investigation has strayed somewhat from the original estimate, but I'm sure you will in your turn appreciate that a job which takes 7 years to do must clearly be more difficult than one that can be pulled off in an afternoon, and must therefore be charged at a higher rate. I have continually to revise my estimate of how difficult the task is, in the light of how difficult it has so far proved to be." The babble from the phone became more frantic. "My dear Mrs. Sorskind, or may I call you Joyce?" "Very well, then, my dear Mrs. Sorskind, let me say this. Do not worry yourself about the bill. Do not let it alarm or discomfort you. Do not, I beg you, let it become a source of anxiety to you. Just grit your teeth and pay it." He pulled his feet down off the table and leaned forward over the desk, inching the telephone receiver inexorably back towards its cradle. "As always, the very greatest pleasure to speak with you, Mrs. Sorskind. For now, goodbye." He at last put down the receiver, picked it up again, and dropped it for the moment into the wastepaper basket. "My dear Richard Macduff," he said, producing a large flat box from under his desk and pushing it across the table at him, "your pizza." Richard stared back in astonishment. No thanks," he said. "I had breakfast. Please, you have it." Dirk shrugged. "I told them you'd pop in and settle up over the weekend," he said. "Welcome, by the way, to my offices." He waved a vague hand around the tatty surroundings. "The light works," he said, indicating the window. "The gravity works," he said, dropping a pencil on the floor. "Anything else we have to take our chances with." Richard cleared his throat. "What," he said, "is this?"
"What is what?"
"This," exclaimed Richard. "All this. You appear to have a holistic detective agency, and I don't even know what one is." "I provide a service that is unique in the world," said Dirk. "The term holistic refers to my conviction that what we are concerned with here is the fundamental interconnectedness of..." "Yes, I got that bit earlier," said Richard. "I have to say that it sounded a bit like an excuse for exploiting gullible old ladies." "Exploiting?" asked Dirk. "Well, I suppose it would be if anybody ever paid me, but I do assure you, my dear Richard, that there never seems to be the remotest danger of that. I live in what are known as hopes. I hope for fascinating and remunerative cases. My secretary hopes that I will pay her. Her landlord hopes that she will produce some rent. The electricity board hopes that he will settle their bill, and so on. I find it a wonderfully optimistic way of life. Meanwhile, I give a lot of charming and silly old ladies something to be happily cross about, and virtually guarantee the freedom of their cats. Is there, you ask, and I put the question for you, because I know you know I hate to be interrupted, is there a single case that exercises the tiniest part of my intellect, which, as you hardly need me to tell you, is prodigious? No. But do I despair? Am I downcast? Yes. Until," he added, "today." "Oh, well, I'm glad of that," said Richard. "But what was all that rubbish about cats and quantum mechanics?" With a sigh, Dirk flipped open the lid of the pizza with a single flick of practiced fingers. He surveyed the cold round thing with a kind of sadness, and then tore off a hunk of it. Pieces of pepperoni and anchovy scattered over his desk. "I am sure, Richard," he said, "that you are familiar with the notion of Schrödinger's cat," and he stuffed the larger part of the hunk into his mouth. Of course, said Richard. Well, reasonably familiar. What is it? Said Dirk, through a mouthful. Richard shifted in his seat. It's an illustration, he said, of the principle that at a quantum level all events are governed by probabilities. At a quantum level, and therefore at all levels, interrupted Dirk, though at any level higher than the subatomic, the cumulative effect of those probabilities is, in the normal course of events, indistinguishable from the effect of hard and fast physical laws. Continue. He put some more cold pizza into his face. Richard reflected that Dirk's was a face into which too much had already been put. What with that and the amount he talked, the traffic through his mouth was almost incessant. His ears, on the other hand, remained almost totally unused in normal conversation. It occurred to Richard that if Lamarck had been right, and you were to take a line through this behaviour for several generations, the chances were that some radical replumbing of the interior of the skull would eventually take place. Richard continued, Not only are quantum level events governed by probabilities, but those probabilities aren't even resolved into actual events until they are measured, or to use a phrase I just heard you use in a rather bizarre context, the act of measurement collapses the probability waveform. Up until that point, all the possible courses of action open to, say, an electron coexist as probability waveforms. Nothing is decided until it's measured. Dirk nodded. More or less, he said, taking another mouthful. But what of the cat?
Bet your life you can't be mean. Go ahead and try. You can't be mean. Try. You can't be mean. Go ahead and try. You can't be mean. Well, you can lose your mind, and you can lose your grip, lose your friends and your lovers. Shut up and live. You can lose Louisiana. You can lose it all, but you can't lose me. Go ahead and try. You can't lose me, child. Can bet you laugh. You can't be mean. Go ahead and try. You can't be mean. Try. You can't be mean. Go ahead and try. You can't be mean. Try. I'm a beautiful guy.
kan geen kwaad. Nee, 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 anders ben je uitgepraat. Doe, 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 doe nou niet zo flauw. Het is omdat ik van je hou. Ik ken een leuke jongen naast ons in de straat. Hij wordt altijd verlegen als ik met hem praat. Toch wil ik nooit geen ander, omdat ik van hem hou. Je kan geen kwaad. Nee, 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 anders ben je uitgepraat. Doe, 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 doe nou niet zo flauw. Het is omdat ik van je hou. Kom, 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 dat ene kusje kan geen kwaad. Nee, 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 anders ben je uitgepraat. Doe, 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 doe nou niet zo flauw. Het is omdat ik van je hou. Ik zou hem willen. Je kan geen kwaad. Nee, 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 anders ben je uitgepraat. Doe, 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 doe nou niet zo flauw. Het is omdat ik van je hou. Kom, 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 dat ene kusje kan geen kwaad. Nee, 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 anders ben je uitgepraat. Doe, 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 doe nou niet zo flauw. Het is omdat ik van je, het is omdat ik van je, het is omdat ik van je.
How? zat helemaal onder in dat drijfzand. En ik ging weg en ik zag mijn moeder aan de kant daar staan. Mijn moeder. Die komt dan altijd in die... Als je doodgaat, denkt, dan komt je moeder altijd weer naar voren. En die riep van, Juni. En dan zag mijn moeder die gewoon een touw naar me. En een plank stak ze me toe en een hand eruit. En ik stakte me verder weg in het drijfzand. En ik stikte helemaal. En toen zag ik... En bovenin zag ik een reepje blauwe lucht. En toen kwam er iets in mezelf op wat ik dan niet meer kon bedenken. Maar dat was wilskracht, mars, vooruit, vuur, vuur, vuur. En toen schoot ik als een raket omhoog. Viel weer een eindje terug en dan nogmaals vuur, vuur. En toen schoot ik hemelhoog, ontsteer ik uit die krochten van de geest. En toen wist ik ook, ik stik niet meer. Ik heb die doodscrisis overleefd. En wat heeft mij... En toen, pas achteraf kun je dat pas helder inzien. Maar toen heb ik ervaren de macht van het woord.
Is this thing on?
Op onze playlist. Vanaf binnenkort kun je dat ongetwijfeld in een of andere zogenaamde krantenwinkel doen. Goedenavond en welkom bij Signaal Ruis. Beginnen doen we vandaag met een nieuwe single van het Rotterdamse Loosburg. Die komt uit op het coole Speedy Wonderground label. Producer Dan Carey en compaan mede-labelbaas Pierre Hall noemen Loosburg de moderne versie van The Velvet Underground. Grote woorden, maar de Rotterdammers maakten voor het label wel een dwarse single. Six Hills van Loosburg.
in like a lion. Then you walked in like a lamb. Pick your fight and then pick it twice. Try again right before my eyes.
She told me she was only slightly stronger than the strongest man. I asked her, do you want to fight me? Because I didn't understand.
Pick your fight and then pick it twice. Pick the fight with a fist of kind. I was just looking for adventure. You meant to shake the hand of peace. I took a good look around, and then I watched your shaking knees.
Pick your fight and then pick it twice.
Never thought I was so unkind.
Six Hills van Loosburg. Op donderdag 23 maart spelen ze trouwens in het Trix Café in Antwerpen voor het luttele bedrag van €5. En als je nog vriendjes meebrengt, dan worden de prijzen zelfs nog goedkoper. Geen excuus dus. En we blijven nog even in Nederland. We waren afgelopen jaar al fan van de soloplaten van Alicia Breton-Ferrer. Tijdens de zoveelste lockdown knutselden ze samen met Doortje Hiddema van onder andere Rats on Rafts ook aan nieuwe nummers. Oorspronkelijk wilden ze één nummer samen maken en ondertussen is dat een plaat geworden. Sacrificial Chanting Mood zal die noemen. Die gaan ze trouwens spelen tijdens Roadburn. En dit is de eerste single daarvan, Reading Glasses van Euroboy samen met Alicia Breton-Ferrer.
Broad daylight, reading silence, and a leading sight. large and hideous. My Oxblock has no roof, no windows. My Oxblock moves,
my Oxblock moves
by track of motorway. My Oxblock looks,
my Oxblock looks,
looks like a chunk of nothing. My
Oxblock like tears
through your stream of thought. My Oxblock hums while I am sleeping.
My
Oxblock dreams,
dreams
of life in a business park where my Oxblock skips through ample parking.
Office Block van Minor Conflict. Het drietal uit Bristol vat hierop naar eigen zeggen de saaiheid van pendelen, grijze kantoorblokken en eindeloze parkings samen. Je kan het nummer vinden op de jaarlijkse compilatie van het Londense Slow Dance Records label. En dan het zeer aanstekelijke plaatje Bad Advice, Good People. En dat is de mini-debuut-LP van het Berlijnse post-punk-trio Clear History. Net verschenen voor het jaareinde op Upset the Rhythm. Aldus de band zelf, hun grootste invloeden zijn onder andere Correcte Grammatica, Rihanna en The Waiting Room van Fugazi. Dit is Song in the Key of Emo van Clear History.
just a prisoner of love who can't escape his fate. Let me out. Poseidon dream, learn how to shake the earth, sail the storm right into me. Sail the storm right into me. Let me out. Cold, cold ocean, save my scorched earth, quench my dull thirst. Tell me what the land is worth. Cold ocean, gonna make a scene between you and me. Burning in our chemistry. Watch it burn. Can you feel the sand slipping through your fingers? Do you feel the tide pulling you in? Can you feel the sand slipping through your fingers? Do you feel the tide pulling you in?
Strakke post-hardcore op Cold Ocean van het viertal Sevek. Dat bestaat uit oudgedienden van Obits en Holy Fuck. En nog zo'n fijne, nieuw samengestelde band is Green Blue uit Minneapolis. Jim Blaha, vroeger actief bij The Blind Shake, bundelde de krachten met zangeres Annie Sparrows van de Soviets. Maar deze combo zullen jullie al wel moeten kennen, want hun vorige platen die stonden bij ons zelfs in ons lijstje met topplaten van 2020. En nu hebben ze een nieuwe uit en jawel, they did it again. Ben je op zoek naar een plaat met geweldige punkrock anthems? Dit is onze tip. En het gaat weer vooruit. De 10 nummers die telkens afklokken tussen de 2 à 3 minuten, zoals dit titelnummer. Dit is Offerings van Green Blue.